This is Paul Beston of City Journal, and I'm here with Nicole Gelinas, a contributing editor of City Journal and a senior fellow of the Manhattan Institute. Nicole's op-ed in the December 5th New York Post, Devilish MTA Details, concerns New York's Metropolitan Transportation Authority, which is experiencing its worst fiscal crisis since at least the 1970s. Nicole, welcome. You've made a habit of writing about dire financial situations, and the MTA is no exception. How did the MTA get itself into such a mess?
Thank you, Paul. This really goes back to the Pataki administration and the earlier years of the Bloomberg administration. We had what can be seen as the biggest economic and tax revenue boom that New York City and state have seen ever in their modern history through most of the early 2000s. Yet the city and state never found new money for mass transit, and they never found the time or the inclination to reform the deep-seated problems within mass transit. And that's exactly how we got to where we are today. For example, Governor Pataki, when he was in office, chose to push the MTA to increase its debt load to very dangerous levels in a couple of years. Due to these decisions, the MTA will be paying 20% of its operating revenues just to go toward debt. This is an unsustainable situation because it forces them to cut back on maintenance, on service, absent other reforms. So it can't go on the way that it is.
What is the MTA going to have to do if it doesn't get some source of outside support at this point?
Well, the management within the MTA itself, by law, has to balance the budget every year, which comes up soon, within the next couple of weeks. So absent a new source of revenue or political impetus for structural reform within the MTA, like renegotiating the union contracts, the MTA will have to drastically cut service as well as raise the fares. And that's why we've seen the announcement that the subway fare could go up, 20-25%, and they could cut back drastically on express bus service in the outer boroughs, require the trains to be spaced half an hour apart instead of 20 minutes apart at some periods. So these are things that New Yorkers will see.
In your op-ed, you talk about a recently released report from former MTA head Dick Ravitch and his commission he put together with some proposals. What are they suggesting at this point?
Yes, Mr. Ravitch headed the MTA back when it was struggling to get out of its last fiscal crisis in the late 70s, early 80s, when it convinced the state government to impose all of these new sources of tax revenue so that it could invest in these assets that had deteriorated substantially during the regional budget crisis. Crises of the late 1970s, when service was just unacceptably terrible. And so the first thing that he's saying, which is good, and it's good that the governor agrees with him, is that we cannot go back to those unacceptable conditions. It would just be a death knell for the city and the regional economy. And what he's done is just put out a list of suggestions for new revenue for the MTA. One of them is to toll the free East River bridges, the Brooklyn Bridge and the other two, as well as the Harlem River bridges, which he says would raise $600 million for the MTA. The other big one is to propose a 1/3 of 1% payroll tax on employers in downstate New York. He says that would raise $1.5 billion a year for the MTA.
Which of these proposals do you find reasonable and which not?
Well, the proposal to toll the bridges, there certainly are questions about it. For one thing, this is supposed to cost $1 billion a year, but only bring in $600 million a year for the Transit Authority. So it's a big question why there's so much waste there. Why would it cost $400 million a year just to collect those tolls? But other than that, it's not unreasonable to toll these bridges. This is just another form of congestion pricing, which I supported several months ago. We're already allocating traffic into Manhattan based on waiting time. There's nothing wrong economically with doing it on price, which is exactly what a toll would be. However, I'm very wary of the income tax proposal or the payroll tax proposal, because New York already has, in the city, the biggest state and local tax burden in the nation. We're already above 10% of people's income. We're simply past the ability to absorb a new tax increase, especially when our big employers, they're surviving banks, they're buying out-of-state banks. They don't need another incentive to move more jobs out of state as they cut costs.
Now, you also make a number of additional suggestions in your piece for Mayor Bloomberg and Governor Patterson to be thinking about and pressing the MTA on. What are those?
Right. One thing that was disappointing about the Ravitch report was that he seemed to look at, and his fellow commissioners seemed to look at how to raise revenue first before they started to think about how to substantially cut costs. Now, clearly, we need to do both, but there has to be at least some attention on the costs. And one of the things that the governor and the mayor could and really have to think about over the next month is how do you rationally reform the MTA labor force, in particular, although not only the unionized labor force, so that you can do these jobs for cheaper and on a more flexible basis. And this is actually a good time to be thinking about this because the Transport Workers Union contract is up in a month from now. And there are some very reasonable things that the governor and the mayor could pressure the MTA to ask for, things like asking the members to contribute more of their wages toward their own health benefits. Right now, they pay 1.5% of their wages toward this, gradually raising that to, you know, 4-4.5% over a few years would save money. Asking them to increase their contributions to their pensions from 2% maybe to 4%, that would save money as well. And longer term, things like allowing the MTA to contract out some work to non-union laborers, things like express bus service. And certainly the union could bid on these contracts as well, but you could get a little bit more or some competition in there, which we don't have. So there's very reasonable things to ask for that could save a couple of $100 million a year. And I think that's necessary to do at the same time that we think about raising revenues.
And those proposals with the unions will no doubt meet with tremendous resistance, you would have to think.
Absolutely. The union struck 3 years ago over very similarly modest requests to increase pension contributions and so forth. But these are things that just have to be done. I mean, you look at the automakers, finally the auto unions are giving back concessions, but it's too late. These companies are very close to bankruptcy, absent government support, and we don't want to get into a situation where it's too late for the MTA, which is what will happen if we don't start to think about these reforms over the next few months.
So what would you guess is going to happen next here?
Well, politically, it will be very, very difficult to toll the bridges. You know, this has been the third rail of New York City politics. This is partly why congestion pricing died despite the mayor's support of it. It's very hard for any mayoral candidate looking ahead to next year to support this and get the outer borough votes. But unfortunately, this has to be, in the same token goes for asking for union concessions. You know, no politician wants to go out there and ask for even the most modest, reasonable concessions from the union. But the fact of the matter is we've got to start touching these political third rails. Otherwise, we're just going to find ourselves in an even deeper mess 6 months, a year from now.
Nicole, thanks for your time. Nicole's piece in today's New York Post is linked on our website, along with her many other articles for City Journal at www.city-journal.org.
Thank you, Paul.